Bond. They range, of course, from Connery to Daniel Craig. You might even vote for Timothy Dalton. Bond Week on Morning Edition from NPR News. The name's Inskeep. Steve Inskeep.
It's 8:58. You're listening to New Hampshire Public Radio. The Exchange is next. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and the Altus Investment Group in Concord, offering fee-only investment management and helping individuals invest in socially responsible companies, online at altusinvest.com. And the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College, New Hampshire's home for politics, online at stanselm.edu/NHIOP. And Rath Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, rathlaw.com. These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio, WEVO Concord 89.1, WEVS Nashua 88.3, WEVH Hanover 91.3, WEVN Keene 90.7, WEVC Gorham 107.1, WEVJ Jackson 99.5, WEVF Colebrook 90.3, and WEVQ Littleton 91.9. Also, W282AB, Dover at 104.3, W217BH, Littleton at 91.3, W280DG, Portsmouth at 103.9, W247AO, Plymouth at 97.3, and W289BT, Colebrook at 105.7 FM. Also heard online at nhpr.org. It's 9 o'clock.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange's Gubernatorial Forum on Healthcare. From the possible expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, to the balancing of dollars at our Health and Human Services Department, to the lowering of health care costs, whoever wins New Hampshire's corner office this November will need to make a lot of important decisions when it comes to health care. So today, in a special exchange, we bring our two major candidates for governor together to talk about where they stand on these issues. Today's forum is in partnership with the New Hampshire Health Policy Council, which consists of the New Hampshire Hospital Association, the New Hampshire Medical Society, the New Hampshire Healthcare Association, and the Home Care Association of New Hampshire. We're here in our Studio D before a live audience, and I want to introduce our two guests, Republican candidate Ovid Lamontagne, and welcome, Mr. Lamontagne. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Also with us, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Maggie Hassan, and again, Ms. Hassan, thank you also. It's a busy week for both of you.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll jump right into it. Today's forum is a dialogue between me and the candidates. But to be fair, we did flip a coin to see who gets that first question to Mr. Lamontagne. It goes to you. So here it is. One of the biggest questions facing New Hampshire's next governor is going to be whether to expand Medicaid or not under the Affordable Care Act. And we talked about this at our forum over a week ago. You said, Mr. Lamontagne, you don't support this. Ms. Hassan, you said you do. Could you just take a minute, Mr. Lamontagne, and tell us why you don't think the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act is a good idea?
Well, first of all, I think I'm grateful to the New Hampshire Health Policy Council and for New Hampshire Public Radio to sponsor this morning's conversation on health care. And that's how I like to think of this. I side with Governor Lynch's early caution back in 2009 that we should not be using Medicaid to expand the roles for uninsureds. We should be looking for a different vehicle. I think we should work with the federal government to bring those dollars in that are targeted to fund the Affordable Care Act, but to find a New Hampshire solution. Laura, I've spent the last half of my professional life working in New Hampshire hospitals, working with New Hampshire healthcare providers. I know this sector better than anyone who's run for governor probably in ever. And I think we can work with our health insurance leaders, our hospital presidents and CEO and senior management team, and physicians and caregivers across the spectrum to come up with a New Hampshire solution for providing a health insurance exchange that's privately driven with a high-risk pool. And then to change our own laws so that we have more competition, more opportunity for choice in healthcare, none like we have for other insurance programs and other products and services we offer in our citizens.
Like car insurance.
Like car insurance, rather than turning over our health care system really to Medicaid, which is designed for the individuals with disabilities, senior citizens, and the poor. And that's a very particularized population that looks to be served by Medicaid, not able-bodied people who control their health care outcomes, who have different incentives that should be used in the marketplace in the private sector to
couple
take care.
Things, yeah, a couple things to follow up on for sure there, Mr. LaMontagne. But Ms. Hassan, give us just your 1 minute or so. We're being a little soft with the time here today on this Medicaid expansion, and then I have a lot more questions for both of you on this, but go ahead.
Well, first of all, again, thank you to NHPR and to the Health Policy Council for hosting this. Every New Hampshire citizen should have access to high-quality, affordable care. It's the right thing to do because human beings need to be healthy, and it brings human dignity, and it's also really important for our economic competitiveness. I talk a lot on the campaign about the importance of having the best workforce in the nation. It needs to be a healthy workforce to be the best in the nation as well. I've also worked in the healthcare field as a lawyer for most of my 20-plus years of practice, both as in-house counsel and outside counsel. And I also bring to this whole issue the experience of being the mother of a young man with severe physical disabilities and very complicated medical challenges. So I come at this as a mom, as a lawyer, and then 6 years in the state Senate, where I worked with Governor Lynch, standing up, for instance, against insurance companies when they were discriminating against sick workers and driving prices up for small businesses, working on transparency in healthcare costs and common sense consumer protections as well, and expanding coverage for young adults. So I bring to the issue of the next step a lot of combined experience and perspective. And I think it's really important for people to think a little bit about what this Medicaid expansion will bring to New Hampshire. We're talking about over $1 billion over the next 6 or 7 years of federal money to expand coverage for as many as 40,000 of our citizens, individual adults who earn $15,000 a year or less. So it's hard for me to understand how anybody thinks somebody earning $15,000 or less does not have difficulty finding private health insurance that they can afford, or families earning about $30,000. So we need to look at how we best bring in that kind of money. But the other thing is, if we don't accept it, other federal money is going away, and we aren't going to be able to afford the kind of care that we need if we turn away billions of dollars of federal money.
Well, so many questions just on this Medicaid, and then I do want to get into this issue of competition that you raised, Mr. LaMontagne. But so back to you, Mr. LaMontagne. What about the federal money that would come in? Is it possible that it could boost New Hampshire's economy, cover more people, a healthier workforce, create more jobs in the healthcare sector because more people will be needed to take care of this newly insured population? Are we looking at this Medicaid expansion in the right way? Could it be an economic boost for New Hampshire?
Well, Maggie looks at it as an all-or-nothing proposition. It is an either-or proposition. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the states do not have to opt into a Medicaid expansion scheme funded on the backs of the elderly and the disabled. If you look at the funding mechanism for that, it takes money out of the system and diverts it. And I say to the federal government, there is another alternative, and we come up with a New Hampshire solution that achieves the objectives of covering more lives, all lives, controlling costs, and improving quality. I care deeply about health care. Betty and I have been foster parents of a special needs young man who's still his advocates. He's a Medicaid beneficiary. I know the system not just as a lawyer, as a business lawyer, but as a parent. I know the system from my dad, who was a dentist, providing Medicaid dental coverage. Very few dentists do that. And I remember being in the foster care training program when people said we couldn't get access to dental care in Manchester. And one woman raised her hand. She said, my dentist does that. And then they said, well, what dentist is that? And they said, Dr. Ovid LaMontagne. And I asked my dad, I said, Dad, how come you take Medicaid patients? He said, how am I going to turn people away? We've done that over the years because people have been ready to work at the local level. We don't need a Washington-based approach
to expanding coverage for health care.
So block grants for Medicaid?
Absolutely.
Is that the way you'd go?
Block grants and negotiating with the federal government to develop that program and plan. They'll provide for our senior citizens. My parents are on Medicare. I don't want them to be in a worse position after the fact that we turn over the keys to Washington. I want them to be in a better position by taking control over the Affordable Care Act's objectives.
Although
here
we're
in
talking
Hampshire.
About Medicaid, not Medicare.
We're talking about both, because the Affordable Care Act is funded by taking monies out of Medicare and diverting them to support the expansion of Medicaid. And people ought to be very clear about that. You'll hear discussion, I'm sure, about who's for Medicare and who supports senior citizens. The Affordable Care Act takes $716 billion over 10 years, and a lot of it from New Hampshire senior citizens, to fund this Affordable Care Act. I say we can do it more efficiently, working in conjunction with the federal government, and we will.
Okay, and this is an important point. So, Ms. Hassan, could you address that first of all? Boy, the Affordable Care Act is overshadowing everything that we're talking about here about health care in the Granite State.
You bet you'll hear some discussion, because what Ovid just said was outrageous. The Affordable Care Act is trying to change the reimbursement system that I know Ovid has talked about too in our healthcare system, so that we can achieve better outcomes for our seniors, for people with disabilities, and savings that can then be used to expand care so that we all participate in the healthcare system, getting the kind of preventive and primary care we need, so we're not getting our care at emergency rooms or at the end of stage of disease. So it is absolutely outrageous to suggest that this money is being taken away from care for our seniors or for people with disabilities. It's particularly outrageous coming from somebody who suggests that we should voucherize Medicare and that we should go along with Bill O'Brien's plan to opt out of Medicare as a state and then leave senior care up to the New Hampshire legislature and Bill O'Brien.
But wait, we're not
talking
no one's
about
talking
that.
About doing
That's
that.
Correct.
I mean,
well,
the House
no.
talked about it, but it's not
well,
a
they
passed, law.
Well, they passed a bill. They passed a bill that said that they would withdraw from Medicare, and Ovid has supported this House. Bill O'Brien just said that over the weekend that we've just seen the beginning of what he wants to do, but Ovid does support the Paul Ryan plan to voucherize Medicare, which would cost seniors about $6,000 more a year. So I think it's really important for people to understand this, and when we are talking about accepting federal money, it hasn't worked. Ovid rejected federal money for local schools. That didn't help our local schools. He wants to reject federal money for, voucherized Medicare. That isn't going to help either. I think it's really important to be straight with people about what it is we say we would do.
Okay, and just let's figure out the Medicare thing.
Right.
Really, the issue at hand is Medicaid. That's the immediate thing in front of us.
Right.
Do you just want to wrap up there? And then I've got some more questions for you specifically to what's happening here in the state.
The question, Laura, is how is this funded? How is it that
this
Affordable
Medicaid
Care
expansion.
Act, how does the Affordable Care Act fund the expansion of Medicaid? And the way it does it, the Congressional Budget Office has it very clearly laid out. $716 billion taken out of Medicare to fund that. And then there's a medical device tax and all sorts of burdens on the delivery system. That we need to acknowledge that, because when we hear about Medicare diversion, that's where it's coming from. It's this administration diverting funds from our senior citizens. And we need to understand that we need to get control over this particular strategy that we all want. I want our citizens, single individuals, unemployed as well as the employed, to have access to health care. And we'll get that if we work together with the leaders in New Hampshire. We don't need a Washington-based solution, which this is. And we certainly don't need the solution that Maggie proposed, which was basically a manipulation of the marketplace through what was called MaggieCare at the time, an agency using taxation on hospitals to fund a new agency and bureaucracy in our state to manipulate and control healthcare delivery. And that's what Washington is proposing too.
And maybe we'll get into that when we start talking about controlling healthcare costs. I want to remind everyone, if you're just joining us, this is a special healthcare forum with gubernatorial candidates Ovid Lamontagne and Maggie Hassan. Today's forum is in partnership with the New Hampshire Health Policy Council. We're here live in our Studio D with an audience. We won't be taking any of your phone calls today. Let's get into the idea of healthcare costs. And both of you have noted that New Hampshire has among the highest healthcare costs in the nation. Granite Staters pay a lot for insurance. What do you think, Ms. Hassan, you first, please? Who's to blame for this? Is it the insurers? Is it the doctors? Is it the hospitals? Is it the drug companies? Who and why do we pay such high rates here in New Hampshire?
It's a complicated problem, and one of the things that I worked on in the State Senate was trying to understand why, in particular, New Hampshire's health care costs are as high as they are and why we saw the variation in costs and charges across the state. And that continues to be work that we need to do. It is a mixture of things, but at its essence, we need to all share the responsibility for the health care system that we will all use. Everybody needs a doctor at some point in their lives. And one of the things that the Medicaid expansion would allow us to do is make sure that we have less of the cost shifting that we see in New Hampshire. So it's important for people to understand that when people don't have insurance in New Hampshire, that what happens is for those of us who pay for private insurance, a family insurance policy is probably paying about $1,000 a year for the care to the uninsured. And that's one of the things that drives our insurance costs up. But we also have to understand what other things drive it up. And one of the things that New Hampshire has led in out of Dartmouth, but now other hospitals are doing it too, and what the Affordable Care Act has been talking about doing is changing the way we pay for health care so that providers are rewarded for better outcomes, not just for the number of patients they see or procedures they perform. And that's one of the things that has really driven our costs up, and that we have several pilots at a number of New Hampshire hospitals to move towards something called an accountable care organization, which is changes the reimbursement structure. And that's at the essence of that $716 billion of savings from the Medicare program
that
we talked about earlier. And that's why it's important for people to understand that's not taking care away. That's improving outcomes, coordinating care better, and eliminating waste and fraud.
So, Mr. LaMontagne, what do you think? Is there one party to this health care cost equation that is perhaps more responsible for those costs going up than others?
Well, you've just heard a lot of words. And in fact, Senator Hassan, when she was majority leader in 2010, led the passage of a bill, ultimately Senate Bill 505, which was called Maggie Care at its inception. It was to establish a government-run agency overseeing our hospitals, taxing our hospitals, and controlling prices and so forth. That bill was gutted and turned into a study commission. This commission just reported out at the end of August, and Senator Hassan's on that commission, and they reported on the issue of cost and cost containment, we need to study it more. Let's be real. This is a very serious issue, this healthcare challenge we have in New Hampshire, not only for businesses but for individuals, families, senior citizens. And one of the reasons we have high costs is we have no competition for the most part in the insurance marketplace. And we've done this ourselves. We've adopted community rating. We've taken the risk out of premium setting. We've basically said to most insurers, you're not welcome here in New Hampshire. So we're left with two and a half insurers. We have a standard insurance plan that we have every insurer offer. We don't have flexibility. And that's what a high-risk pool would allow. That's what cafeteria-style plans would allow. And we need to start decoupling employment from insurance. You don't get auto insurance because of the place you work. You get auto insurance because you happen to see a great ad, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% on your premiums. And there's much, much more competition. There should be competition in New Hampshire, and there isn't. And then we need to align the service delivery system so you have an accountable care organization. We don't need an Affordable Care Act to do that.
But that's one area where you agree, accountable care organizations are a good idea.
Absolutely, and a medical home model, and really start to look at how we deliver services so that the right care is given at the right place at the right time, beginning with that primary care physician who should be available for every citizen of New Hampshire. That's where we need to be moving in so that the right care is provided at the right place and at the right time.
And you mentioned community rating, and I really do want to talk about that because that's an issue that comes up a lot. But before we do, Ms. Hassan, I want to give you maybe 30 seconds or 45 seconds to respond to the critique that this commission that you supported ended up being not much of anything.
Well, first,
this is the Maggie Care that we keep hearing about.
Well, first of all, it was a bipartisan bill that passed unanimously out of the state Senate and then passed in the House. And so it was a recognition by members of both political parties in 2010 that health care costs are a real issue and that we needed transparency in health care financing. And the commission that was established has done some initial work around it. It was slowed down in part because of very large cuts to our hospitals by this legislature. So there was never any kind of funding for the commission. And so that work still needs to be done. But I think what's really important for us all to focus on is the comparison that Ovid is making here. I don't think auto insurance is just like health insurance. I don't think being an unsafe driver is the same thing as getting breast cancer. It's different.
That's
and we need to make sure
aspect.
And we actually have adjusted community rating in this state right now. And for your listeners, you asked me at the beginning, you know, what does community rating mean?
Right.
It's the degree to which we share the cost of the health care system and the degree to which we allow private insurers to rate their premiums based on the experience of illness in a group. And because it's different, your health is not the same thing as your driving record. Some things you can control in your health, but some things you just can't. And because those two things are different, health insurance allows some premium adjustment for the degree of illness in an insured group, but we now do it with factors of, for instance, just age, not whether people are sick. When I first became a state senator, there was a law in the books that had been called Senate Bill 110 that allowed insurance companies to charge small businesses based on whether their employees were sick. So they were discriminating against sick workers. That drove up premium prices for some of our small businesses as much as 300%. So the people, they were often mom-and-pop shops, maybe just owned by a couple, and one member of the couple had had cancer. And all of a sudden, the people who needed the insurance the most couldn't afford to pay it. So I worked with Governor Lynch and members of both political parties. We got a coalition together, and we changed that law to something called adjusted community rating so that the illnesses of employees can't be used to drive up the premiums.
So the complaint is, though, that I've heard is that after that happened, insurers left the state and there wasn't enough competition. Is that the critique that you're making, Mr. Lamontagne?
Well, they left the state back in the mid-1990s when we first put this in place. And let's be very clear about this. Health insurance is exactly designed to take care of someone who has prostate cancer, breast cancer, a heart ailment. That's exactly the risk that we should be insuring. But the audience must know that unlike auto insurance, you don't file a claim with your auto insurance company when you change the oil to the car, when you have routine maintenance. You file auto insurance when you have an accident, something that's unexpected. Health insurance should operate the same way, much more so. Right now, health insurance is used as the portal to pay for everything, your routine exams and so forth. And I'm suggesting that we need to change the way we work with our citizens to access that health care. And what's more intimate in life than the relationship you have with your doctor and your provider, and to be able to make sure that you can work there and talk about what will make you healthier and reduce your risk and, as a result, lower the cost. We don't have a system right now that rewards citizens and gives them an incentive for losing weight or exercising or for that matter, you choosing a lower-cost routine exam at a lower-cost provider than perhaps at a hospital, which might be higher cost.
So here's the question, though. Yeah. How do you fashion a system where you're not discriminating against people who are sick? It's not their fault.
Correct.
Ms. Hassan's son, your foster son, born with disabilities,
yes.
Someone who gets cancer at 35.
Right.
How do you fashion a system where those people, through no fault of their own, get sick and they're charged exorbitant rates, and a system that includes some of the incentives that you talk about, you know, sure, you exercise, you eat right, you don't smoke, so maybe you do deserve a lower rate. How do you achieve both of those goals?
You provide choices by making sure there are more insurance companies designing plans that work for people in their employment or individuals who enter into a large risk pool, for example, to access health care individually. You create a marketplace. You don't bring out the market. You don't tax hospitals or increase taxes on beds like Maggie did and divert those dollars not to health care but for the general fund payments. That's we've gotten out of control in this state about what we do with health care. And we need to go back to asking ourselves, what is this about in the first place? And it's about making sure that our citizens have access to the best quality care right from the beginning, and that's access to a primary care physician, and we need to focus in that medical home model going forward, and then having insurance work alongside that.
What about that? The idea that insurance needs to kind of take into account both of these groups, and that if we had more companies, we maybe could resolve this problem.
Well first of all, the number of insurance companies nationally shrunk over the last couple of decades because of consolidations and investment strategies. So that's what happened in the first part of this century, and it didn't have to do with the fact that community rating, which had been in New Hampshire since the mid-90s, was brought back in a modified form. It also is important to notice that we're 1.3 million people, and that isn't a whole lot of lives for a whole lot of insurance companies to come compete over. If they want to come into the state and they're only going to get a small slice of 1.3 million people for their business, they're less likely to come into a small state to do that. But let's go back to the bigger question. There are employers and insurance companies that are working with employees on wellness programs, for instance, that do reward healthy lifestyles and behaviors. There are options that we're working through accountable care organizations, the very thing that Ovid just mentioned, that incentivizes providers as well as their patients to take care of their health in a proactive way.
Sure, and I hear about those incentives, and I see people at the YMCA signing, you know, I came in, but it doesn't seem to be really working. New Hampshire's just getting more and more overweight, for example.
Well, we need to give the accountable care model time to work. None of this changes overnight. But the other thing we should look at is what Ovid is really talking about, too, in terms of the primary care network that we have in New Hampshire. One of the very important parts of that primary care network are places like Planned Parenthood, making sure that women have access to health care. And Ovid supports defunding Planned Parenthood, and he supports limitations on women's rights to make their own health care decisions. And those are going to be very important factors in not only the health of our state generally, but also in the ability of women to actually afford primary health care. Because much of what places like Planned Parenthood do, much of the way women make their own health care decisions really affects their pocketbook. And it's very important that whatever we do, we make sure that men and women are treated equally in terms of their access to basic health care.
I want to move on to Health and Human Services cuts. So the next governor will definitely have to deal with this. But Mr. Lamontagne, maybe 30, 45 seconds on this idea that, you know, women's health care, people like Senator Hassan say, has been threatened by this current legislature.
Well, first of all, just to go back to a prior point, there are 50, the insurance department tells me there are about 50 companies, health insurance companies, registered to do business, qualified to do business in New Hampshire. And yet we only have 2.5, give or take, insurance carriers. And that's because we make it very difficult for true competition to occur. We need New Hampshire-based solutions. And I think there's this great opportunity working with our leadership in New Hampshire. I know the leaders of our hospitals and our insurance companies that do work here and our doctors, and they're ready, willing, and able to craft a New Hampshire solution given the chance to do that. And when it comes to accessing health care,
let's talk about that. Planned Parenthood, women's health centers.
I'm going to be the governor of New Hampshire given the chance to serve. My role, I'm not a legislator, I'm the governor, which means I'm duty bound to enforce the laws of the state of New Hampshire and the United States of America. Women and men will have access to full services. And that's exactly the way it'll be.
If Planned Parenthood funding was cut, would you put that funding somewhere else so women could get the same services,
yes,
if not through Planned Parenthood?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the issue with Planned Parenthood is that it's the greatest abortion provider in the state. We don't believe in taxpayer funding of abortions. If Planned Parenthood had a wholly owned subsidiary that all it did was focus on contraception, there would be no debate. There would have been no debate. And that's the issue. We need alternative providers. But to make sure women have access to contraception as well as men, and we need to educate men, too, about the responsibilities that they have in the community.
Okay, real quick to you, and then I do want to move on to Health and Human Services.
Taxpayer money does not fund abortion in New Hampshire or anywhere else in the United States of America. And it's really important for people to understand that. But it's also a little bit disingenuous for Ovid to suggest that he's not a legislator. One of the things governors do is decide whether to sign bills. And he has been very clear that if a bill to defund Planned Parenthood came to his desk, he would sign it. And if bills came to limit a woman's right to make her own health care decisions, to really chart her own future, her own economic and personal future, he would sign those bills too. And given that the O'Brien legislature has passed a number of these bills and says that they will do more of it, it's very logical to assume that if they are reelected and Ovid is their governor, those things will happen and limit women's health access.
Well, and I know abortion has been a big point of contention between the two of you. I want
to
move
really
on.
It's really not a topical issue, though, Laura, and that's what's disingenuous about this. This is not foremost of anyone I speak with around the state. It's about jobs, the economy, making sure we can get New Hampshire moving again. And Maggie's a lawyer. She knows better. The law cannot change Roe versus Wade. No act of the legislature can do that, and it won't be allowed.
Well,
it'll come
all right,
to me.
And let's move on. I know that this is a point of difference between you, and we'll let it sit at that on that issue. I do want to talk about the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. It's been cut. The budget there has been cut considerably by both the governor and the legislature for several years now under Republicans and Democrats. And yet, as you both know, demand for services is still strong given the economy. Two questions. And I think to you first, Ms. Hassan, if elected governor, would you restore certain cuts within Health and Human Services?
Yes. The first and foremost, we need to restore cuts that were made to the hospitals. But because some of the federal money is going to go away under the Affordable Care Act, which is now the law of the land, we're going to need to find ways to make sure that our providers get the resources they need to serve patients in the state. And we're going to need to work to, as the budget recovers, to find ways to restore some of those cuts. But we also have to help the department find efficiencies and improve outcomes as best they can with the limited resources that we always have.
So restoring, first, certainly the cuts to the hospitals, that would be a big priority.
Yeah.
How about you, Mr. LaMontagne?
It is a significant priority for me. And Laura, I was Senate legal counsel in 1991 when the Medicaid enhancement tax was passed. I know what the arrangement was back then. I heard it in the aisle. And it's clear that New Hampshire honored its commitment to fund the disproportionate hospital share. And it did so for 19 years.
Disproportionate hospital share, again, just to
essentially how it works
people.
Is the hospitals are taxed at a certain rate based on net net revenues, essentially, to make it as simple as possible.
And then healthcare is complicated.
The state reimbursed those hospitals in the exact amount that they were taxed, and then they used that money to get a matching grant from the federal government. And for 19 years, that was part of that was the arrangement. And then we changed that. We neither need to repeal the Medicaid enhancement tax or fund the DISH, so that we honor our commitment to these hospitals of providing care for the uninsured, the poor, and so forth. There are great assets for us in the community. I'd also look at going back to Washington and continue to work to try to get block granting of Medicaid monies to our states, so we have much more flexibility. And that's a direction we've been heading into. And Medicaid managed care, Laura, I think will also give us an opportunity to be flexible with our providers and with the state in terms of what it can do. And finally, the waiting list for the disabled, not always coming under health care per se, but it's part of an important, there's a component part to that, but it's an important funding that we have so that there is no interruption of the care we provide to our individuals with disabilities when they leave the educational sector to move into adult behavioral services.
So you and Ms. Hassan actually sounds like you agree on
we
some
do.
Of these things. Restore the cuts to hospitals. I'm imagining, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Hassan, you would also support restoring funding to the waiting list for people with disabilities, again, once they age out of the public education system.
And that's actually something I did while I was in the Senate and balanced a budget with Governor Lynch in one of the toughest economies since the Great Depression. We actually fully funded the waiting list for people with developmental disabilities. But, you know, I think it's really important to listen closely to this discussion, because when we talk about block granting Medicaid, the state of New Hampshire has not historically done a good job of meeting its commitments under Medicaid. And in fact, this is one of the areas where the federal government has kept its commitment. So one of the things we need to think about is what happens to the tax and disproportionate share funding setup or formula that Ovid just talked about. The Affordable Care Act is the law of the land, and that money from the federal government in that category is going away because the federal government has said that they want to expand Medicaid, and there is assumption there they're going to pay for 100% of it, that there will be fewer uninsured to care for. So we need to be thinking about how to do that. I would have loved it if this legislature and executive council had accepted the no-strings-attached federal dollars to set up New Hampshire's own health care exchange so we could begin to work with our insurers and our hospitals and other providers about how we're going to have a New Hampshire-based system. But this legislature, and Ovid supported it, rejected that funding, and so now that's going to come down on us in a one-size-fits-all system, which is too bad.
I have one more question for each of you on this issue, and then we'll move on. So, Mr. Lamontagne, to Ms. Hassan's point, the state of New Hampshire has played games with Medicaid money before. Once it's in a block grant, we've seen problems where money intended for Medicaid has been siphoned off for other priorities. If you block grant the Medicaid expansion, how do you ensure that it doesn't become funny money, so to speak?
It won't be funny money, Laura. Let me be very clear about this. I care deeply about health care. I care deeply about what our citizens receive for their health care. Unlike my opponent, who has been more than ready to take monies that were intended to support health care and divert them to other purposes like raiding the JUA fund, Maggie was part of the leadership working with Governor Lynch that
did that. That's the Joint Underwriting Association.
Joint Underwriting Association.
Fund.
The medical
malpractice fund.
Insurance, exactly, in this state, trying to take the reserves that doctors paid in and divert that to general revenues. That is a breach of the commitment that the state made in partnership with a private organization to provide for that safety net for physicians. I will not divert funds, and if there's a Medicaid block grant, those dollars will go right to providing the health care services that are intended. And we have a record here. My opponent has a clear record of diverting funds and using hospitals and caregivers to divert monies to another purpose, like taxing, raising taxes on beds for nursing homes and hospitals. That is not what should be done. Taxes that are taken for a particular purpose need to be used for that purpose.
Well, and that's a question I had when you were talking about you'd like to restore this aspect of Health and Human Services and that aspect for both of you, really, but you, Ms. Hassan, first. So if you restore these cuts to Health and Human Services, where does the money come from? Governor Lynch and the Democrats were accused during their time of, you know, playing games with certain pots of money here and there. So where does it come from?
Well, first of all, let's be really clear. The Bill O'Brien legislature, who Ovid supports and praises, has diverted a huge amount of money. The biggest tax increase in this state in the last decade, at least, came at the hands of the Republican legislature on our hospital community.
We're not talking about the Bill O'Brien legislature, Maggie.
Well, we're talking about policies that you have said you support.
No.
Would you not support that?
You don't support that tax increase.
Not the way she's characterized this.
So to talk about Democrats making very difficult decisions to balance the budget in the worst economy since the Great Depression and compare it to what this group has done, which has really taxed our hospitals at a level that is decimating care for the people of New Hampshire. And I've offered concrete solutions, concrete proposals about how we can begin to recover revenues and begin to restore funding to some very important places and services, the university system, our hospitals. We have some mental health challenges. The CHINS program got cut. I've talked with specificity about how we can go about restoring that. Ovid has not. So when he talks about cutting and continuing to cut, he should be honest with people about where the money he's talking about is going to come from. In our last debate, he said about $300 million could come from IT improvements. That's three times the entire budget of our Department of Corrections. So we need to focus here on what we really can do and what's realistic. I have a record of balancing budgets, making very tough decisions, but protecting our citizens and our economy while we're doing it.
So let me just jump in, and I want to give you both more leeway to answer the questions, but if you could be short here. Here's the question. Both of you want to restore services to Health and Human Services for mm-hmm. populations that you both feel really need the help. So to you first, Mr. LaMontagne, and then Ms. Hassan, real short. So where does the money come from? Can you give us an A, B, C, or maybe even just an A and B?
Sure. Well, before that, I want to point out that Maggie didn't answer the question either before. I mean, she didn't explain to you how she got to where she did in terms of taking that JUA money.
Well, let's focus on the future.
I'm just responding to what was just said. And she talked about the Bill O'Brien budget, not the budget that she helped to construct, which borrowed operating costs, which had a lot of actually accounting gimmicks and taking money that belonged for health care. I won't do that. I'm going to do zero-based budgeting. We're going to budget this. We're going to create a budget at state government level from the bottom up. We're going to find efficiencies through consolidation, and we're going to set priorities. And that's the way this budget's going to be constructed. And the priority in New Hampshire has to be public safety and providing for those citizens in our state who truly need the services, individuals with disabilities, the poor, and make sure the system works for them.
So but zero-based budgeting will provide budgeting, the funding for that?
Zero-based budgeting will, and I will not increase taxes and fees, unlike the record that Maggie has. Now, she hasn't told you yet today what taxes and fees she looks to raise in order to fund what she thinks. I think it's still in the budget. There are still opportunities for considerable savings, and that's where we're going to look. You know, some of the legislative leaders have said we can shave off $400 million from a $10.4 billion budget, biannual budget. I say zero-based budgeting, level fund, and we'll get there.
Okay, and again, focusing on the future, not what people have done in the past. Right. Ms. Hassan, could you give us maybe an A, B, as to where the money comes from to restore these monies that both you and Mr. LaMontagne say you'd like to restore? Where does the money
sure,
come from?
Sure, I've laid it out several times. First, our business profits revenues and other revenues in the state are beginning to recover, so we're going to see some increase that way. There are some decisions that this legislature made that I think merit reversal.
The cigarette tax 10% reduction.
For instance.
10-cent reduction.
10-cent reduction, which, you know, they cut the cigarette tax at the same time they cut university funding by 50% and hospital funding. And they might as well have said to our young people, smoke more, go to college less. And I've also said I would support one highly regulated, high-end casino that could truly effectively compete with what's happening in Massachusetts. So that's another source of revenue. It's really important for people to listen to what Ovid isn't saying, which is that, you know, first of all, I have a record of actually closing programs, closing down outdated facilities, consolidating, and making very difficult choices in 2009 with our budget. And it's really important when you talk about another $400 million out of the state budget for people to understand that that's a large percentage of the actual general fund that the state has, and to ask if we've already cut our CHINS program, Children in Need of Services, decimated our mental health program, cut our hospitals by over $100 million with an effective tax increase on them. What other cuts is Ovid talking about?
Well, and just real quickly, how much money do you expect? I want to ask you too, Mr. Sure. LaMontagne. Would you get from gambling, for example? That hasn't come up yet in terms of a
sure.
revenue source.
After, just I mean, real it, short. It needs to be looked at with fresh data, but after you pay for the safety and social concerns, which are real, somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 to $80 million a year after licensing fees.
And Mr. LaMontagne, you support limited expanded gambling as well. How much money do you think that might bring in?
I really have no idea, and I'd leave it up to the proponents of that, but there's a difference here. Maggie's talking about raising taxes, raising fees, and I'm talking about working within the existing revenue structure we have, and if we were to have expanded gaming at any level, the monies would be used to offset current expenses, whether it's funding the I-93 expansion, lowering business profits tax, or adding money to the targeted aid for education. That's where I would direct those dollars, not increasing state funding for additional programs.
Okay, real quick.
And just one of the things I'll say about the cigarette tax, one of the most effective public health things you can do is restore us to the level that we were in, because every time the cigarette tax goes up a little bit, young people smoke a lot less. That saves lives and money.
Well, lots to talk about. I'm glad we've got a whole hour with the two of you today. This is a special health care forum with the gubernatorial candidates, candidates for New Hampshire governor, Republican Ovid Lamonte, and Democrat Maggie Hassan. Our forum is in partnership with the New Hampshire Health Policy Council. Again, we're coming to you live from our Studio D here at NHPR. We're not taking any of your calls today. We're spending the whole hour digging into some of these complicated but critical healthcare questions facing New Hampshire's next governor. And as I mentioned, this is a forum put on in partnership with other organizations. Here's a question from Cynthia Cooper, president of the New Hampshire Medical Society, one of our partners. She says, at Wentworth Douglas Hospital, suicidal patients are often held up in the emergency department for many days. They cannot be transferred as New Hampshire Hospital does not have the capacity to accommodate them. Dr. Cooper wants to know, how would you improve access to mental health services here in New Hampshire? And just stepping back first, Mr. Lamonte, you've spoken about a lean government. I would add on to Dr. Cooper's question, is this mental health example she gives an example of government becoming too lean? We've gone overboard in terms of mental health services cuts.
Well, first of all, I've had a chance to visit New Hampshire State Hospital. I've also visited at Glencliff up in Warren, New Hampshire. That's a little town that has a rocket ship in it, if you've ever been there. And so one of the wonderful things about campaigning in New Hampshire, you get to see all the little hamlets and wonderful communities of our state. We don't have the capacity, frankly, to take on more patients. At the New Hampshire State Hospital, we've actually reduced the bed size there. And it's not so much a funding problem as it is a planning issue. And we need to continue to plan and make sure that we have the infrastructure to support individuals with mental health issues. That's critically important. I am very pleased to know and to have worked with Don Shumway, who was really the leader here in creating a community-based mental health support system through area organizations, not-for-profits like Manchester Community Mental Health System. Some of it's funding, but a lot of it is prioritizing the focus, where and how these individuals can be treated. And frankly, our hospitals are right now the safety net that for a lot of these individuals. They're spending time in the hospital where they should be in a specialty environment. And so I would want to work with the New Hampshire Hospital, State Hospital, as well as local hospital leaders to determine where's the best place, where's the best venue for our individuals to find that care that they need to move themselves.
Do we need more beds then at New Hampshire Hospital so folks aren't hanging out in the emergency room for days on
end? It certainly seems that way based on the numbers that I've heard in visiting there. I mean, the staff there is incredible. You know, people have made a life commitment, Laura, to serving our citizens who have, you know, really very serious mental health issues, and they're remarkable. We need to leverage what they can do to offer these services to a larger number of people in working in partnership with the civic and charitable community of our state.
And I want to get Ms. Hassan in on this, but they keep getting back to this question, okay, so we need more beds at New Hampshire Hospital. Again, how do you pay for that?
Well, a lot of them are Medicaid funded, and I think if we had Medicaid block grant, we'd have a lot more flexibility to use those dollars to work with our service providers, New Hampshire State Hospital, as well as other providers in our state, to develop a much better safety net than simply one that's really highly managed by Washington. And I think that's the direction we need to move into.
Ms. Hassan, mental health, lots of questions around there. A lawsuit saying that we're not doing right by folks with mental illness right now. What are your solutions to this?
Well, first of all, in addition to hearing from hospitals and doctors about the crisis that they're facing with mental health patients in their emergency rooms, I'm hearing from law enforcement, too. The Manchester Police will tell you that much of the interaction they have in Manchester today is with people who are in need of mental health treatment and who can't get it. And we need to make sure that we are looking at all aspects of the system. Community-based care is really, really important, first and foremost, for the appropriate treatment and civil rights of our folks with mental illness. We shouldn't be putting people in highly restrictive environments if they don't need to be there.
And that's what the lawsuit's partly
about,
right?
And that's one of the concerns that the lawsuit has. We did have a robust community-based system at one point, both for people with mental illness and for people with developmental disabilities. And as funding has been cut, that has slipped away. And one of the things that is of great concern to me is some of the cuts made by this last legislature that has impacted the ability for us to provide the kind of community-based service as well as hospital-based service in an appropriate setting for all of our citizens. So we need to return to that commitment and prioritize appropriately in the budget, but it does ultimately require us to come together and make sure that we have a system that meets the needs of all of our citizens and doesn't place them in the most restrictive environment.
I want to ask both of you a question that hasn't yet come up so far in this gubernatorial race, and it's about the so-called silver tsunami. As both of you know, New Hampshire has become the nation's fourth oldest state. This silver tsunami, many say, will require all sorts of increased services, ambulances at the local level, nursing homes at the county level, Alzheimer's care, many millions of dollars. Here's a question from the Home Care Association, another one of our partners, which asks, what are your plans to support the needs of those with disability and aging issues who require long-term care, health care, community support? Mr. LaMontagne, can you address that question? And also, just what's lacking right now to prepare for this silver tsunami in terms of healthcare infrastructure, healthcare workforce?
Well, first of all, I think I'm the son of two silver tsunamiites. I guess that's the term of art. I don't know. On behalf of those in the audience here that was qualified, I think, for that, and I may actually qualify for that, I will refer to it as our senior citizens. And our senior citizens deserve to stay at home as long as they possibly can. One of the things that really troubles me about the Affordable Care Act is the money it takes out of home health care, a substantial amount of money over the course of the next 10 years. We should be looking to make sure that we have a robust home health care provider network here in New Hampshire so that our senior citizens can truly be at home, be close to loved ones. And then if they can't be maintained at home, if they can't live there in a successful lifestyle, then they find their way into a local, hopefully group home or some lower-level community facility, again, close to home, close to families, close to their supports network, and ultimately to have the resources available at the skilled level if we need to, if citizens need skilled nursing care. Again, a lot of the skilled nursing facilities are Medicaid-dependent. The payer mix is heavily dependent on public, reimbursement, either through Medicare and or Medicaid. And so we need to continue to work with those providers to find the best way to enable them to succeed. Some of our wonderful providers are not-for-profit organizations, and they're dedicated professionals who made a lifetime of commitment to our senior citizens.
And those Medicaid reimbursements under Republicans and Democrats
Thank
have
you for
gone
mentioning
down.
That. Yes, they
so
have gone down.
So what would you do as governor?
Well, again, I'm working with our leadership. I would see what is it that we can do to enhance the reimbursement, but also to develop the most efficient system possible, Laura, to make sure that the right care is provided to our senior citizens as well as our newborn and other individuals at the right place at the right time. And that's what we don't have right now. And that's what hopefully managed care, Medicaid managed care will, at least in the first phase, if not in the second phase. In the first phase, we're talking about creating really a primary care network for individuals who qualify as Medicaid beneficiaries. And that should be true for senior citizens as well.
Yeah, Ms. Hassan as well. This idea that I'm sure you, Mr. LaMontagne, agree, older people want so much to stay at home as long as possible. But Medicaid reimbursement rates have gone down and down and down, and some people don't want to take Medicaid patients anymore. What about that in light of this silver tsunami
about? Let's start with the fact that we do have an aging population, and we have a particular concern around the rate of Alzheimer's that we're likely to see. And one of the concerns I have is that we don't really have an Alzheimer's plan in this state that would help us look at what kind of community-based caregiving network we're going to need and what the various components of that should be. We have some models when we were appropriately funding community-based services for people with disabilities that might have some things we can learn to plan for that. But, you know, it's really important as we talk about an aging population to talk about this notion of voucherizing Medicare that Ovid supports, because what happens...
This is the Paul Ryan plan.
This
for
is the Paul Ryan
the
plan.
This is not but, what I support. Not voucherizing. I've never heard that word before, let alone
you supported the Paul Ryan plan.
I support flexibility in the reimbursement, and that's what we're talking about.
Well, but you've supported Paul Ryan's plan that would say to seniors, rather than be in Medicare, you get to have a certain amount of money, and you get to negotiate with health insurance companies or with providers, and let's say home-based care folks, about how you're going to pay for your care. And the AARP, a number of other folks have looked at this, and it would cost seniors about $6,000 more a year.
That's your description of Paul Ryan's plan. That's not my plan. What my plan would be is to put more control, more choices in the hands of New Hampshire policymakers and doctors and physicians about how we design a reimbursement model that right now, think of this, and the citizens listening to this show should really understand that the federal government funds Medicare, but it also manipulates the reimbursement. We should be the third-party administrator of those federal dollars to design a plan that works for New Hampshire and the region rather than a Washington one-size-fits-all approach, which is what Medicare has done.
Right now,
that's
Medicare is
about.
Federally
Absolutely.
Controlled. The states really don't have a role in Medicare right now.
And they supply billing back to Medicare for which they get reimbursed based on a schedule that Medicare designs.
Here's my question. As governor, do you have anything to do with Medicare? Isn't the main
really.
Point with governors? Ms. Hassan, about Medicaid, again, for the
right.
poor and disabled.
But let's think about this for a second, because what Ovid just said is that the legislature in New Hampshire, which has slashed funding to mental health, slashed funding to children in need of services,
and stolen JUA money,
slashed funding to families with disabilities who need to take care of family members in their homes. He wants to put them in charge of Medicare. I don't think that's a good idea. I think Medicare works well for seniors. I think we need to improve the way we reimburse physicians and focus on accountable care organizations, which is what the current plan is to do. But I don't want to hand over Medicare for our seniors to the New Hampshire legislature.
And I'm not proposing
that.
That is, in fact, what Ovid is saying. If the state controls the standards for Medicare, if they just accept the money in a block grant or accept the voucher system that Romney and Ryan are proposing, that's what would happen. So we need to be clear about that. And on Medicaid, again, we have an opportunity to accept $1.1 billion of federal money into New Hampshire's economy to insure more people so there would be less cost shifting
under the Affordable Care Act
to help people who are in nursing homes, because where many seniors who use Medicaid need it for long-term care. And so we could have those funds paid at 100% by the federal government to help our seniors and strengthen the Medicaid and Medicare system for those seniors.
That makes
a lot of sense.
But that's getting the silver tsunami.
Way.
Yeah.
But we should have
and
those
you're
funds.
You're saying block grant it.
Yes, based on a New Hampshire plan that matches the objectives of the federal plan, not simply rolling over, turning over our health care, our uninsured population into the Medicaid system not designed for them. And that's the fundamental difference in approach here. And the other thing I would have to say is Maggie's approach is more government control. Mine is about empowering people, providers, creating more choice in health care for New Hampshire, because I care deeply that we make sure that the best care is provided. And that's empowering the physicians first and foremost, who we spend time with, who are as intimate about us and our lives as anyone it could be, and every citizen should have access to that primary care physician to start with to make sure we get the right care at the right place at the right time.
And hard to believe, we have 3 minutes left. Okay. So, Senator Hassan, if you can just keep it short.
The reason Medicare exists is because the private insurance market didn't want to insure older Americans, because as we all age, we need health care more. And so this talk of competition and choice really is a talk about going back to a system where private insurance can pick and choose whether to insure people who have pre-existing conditions. And that's not a good idea.
I have one couple more last quick questions for you. This one I think will be a little easier.
A lightning round.
Okay. Not quite a lightning round. You did well on the lightning round a week or so ago. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. LaMontagne, your position on the limited use of marijuana to help people who are extremely sick. Would you veto or sign a bill allowing the use of marijuana for medical purposes?
Support medicinal marijuana if it's properly prescribed by a physician for the right reason and if it's dispensed by a pharmacy. And I think that we ought to allow for our citizens working with their physicians to have maximum health care. And that may include, in some cases, medicinal marijuana.
And is this an area where you agree, Ms.
I actually voted for a bill that provided prescriptions for medicinal marijuana with a very controlled dispensing system.
Both of you have, as you mentioned earlier, children with severe medical needs, your foster son, your son, Ben. I hate to make you rush on this, but I would like to know, Ms. Hassan, I'll turn to you first. How has that experience with Ben shaped your feelings about healthcare?
Oh, first of all, Ben is a complete and total joy. He is a smart and funny 24-year-old young man. And his experience has really led me to understand how essential it is that everybody have access to a wonderful, flexible, patient-centered healthcare. And we have been blessed in New Hampshire to have wonderful providers. We have been blessed to work with this medical home model. And the most important thing that we all need to preserve is access to this high-quality, affordable care where patients and physicians are not interfered with by insurance companies or anywhere else.
Mr. LaMontagne.
My life with James has transformed my life and my wife's life. What a gift. And anyone who's had someone with special needs realizes that they teach you so much more than you can ever teach them. And beginning with early intervention services provided to us by Easter Seals, helping us to help our son learn how to feed himself and crawl and every basic need. And I'm just blessed that he's part of our life.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you very much. I know this is a very busy week. The campaign is going fast and furious. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you.
That's Ovid LaMontagne and Maggie Hassan, the Republican and Democratic candidates for New Hampshire governor. Our forum this morning was in partnership with the New Hampshire Health Policy Council, which consists of the New Hampshire Hospital Association, the New Hampshire Medical Society, the New Hampshire Healthcare Association, and the Home Care Association of New Hampshire. Technical help today from Nathan Chervik, Mike Saffel, and R.J. Perkins. Dan Colgan was our engineer. Also, thanks to Sherry Nixon, Ellen Grimm, and Priscilla Malcolm. Today's program was produced by Exchange Executive Producer Keith Shields and NHPR's VP of Programming, Abby Goldstein. Thanks for being with us, everyone. I'm Laura Kanoi.
Diane Rehm Show, next to 10 on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly cloudy in central and northern New Hampshire, with a chance of some showers, highs 60 to 65 degrees. Some breaks of sunshine in southern areas of the state, highs there near 70. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy with some patchy fog, lows near 45 in the north, ranging to 55 in the south.